Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. This morning, we'll hear part two of a two-part program about the Habitat Conservation Plan in Oregon State Forests. We're exploring what the HCP is, the mandate behind it, how it was developed, and how it will roll out. To help us understand the complex Habitat Conservation Plan and its purposes, our guest is Michael Wilson. Mike is the division chief in charge of the state forests for the Oregon Department of Forestry.
As we begin part two, Wilson talks about management in the conservation areas.
The HCP simply has a somewhat larger area dedicated to growth of habitat for the species. And those aren't total set-asides. There's 272,000 acres out of the permit area of 640,000 acres that are designated for habitat development. 75,000 of those acres in that 272, we are going to be managing in a variety of different ways to develop habitat faster than at the current scale. And some of those are forest health reasons, like Swiss needlecast disease is a big factor on the North Coast. Those stands, a lot of them have just shut down and they're not growing. Others are, we have stands in there that are that were planted as plantations. They're dense and they're going to need some partial cutting work to enhance them and move them along. And we think we'll get a better habitat result during the permit term if we do those operations. And that's a bit of an unknown in terms of how much volume will come out of there. And so one of the things, all of our estimates so far have not realized the full potential of the acres that we can operate on in those areas. Now, I want to be really clear that those operations inside of those areas are for habitat development and not for timber harvest volume target purposes, but they're going to produce some timber volume. We know that. It's just a matter of not knowing exactly how much, and all of the modeling we've done so far, we haven't been able to get it to do all of the acres it's supposed to be doing, which is there's a little bit of a fuzziness about the numbers there.
Will the Habitat Conservation Plan have an effect on larger, older trees? Are there some species that you're trying to protect that survive better in that kind of environment? And will that have an effect on what your decisions are?
Yes, and those are really the target species and the reason that the habitat conservation areas for those species are as large as they are and designed the way they are. Specifically, spotted owls, marbled murrelets, and red tree voles are three of the key species there that really require late seral forest or mature forest conditions, large trees, large limbs, layered canopies, if you will, complex forest canopy and that sort of thing. That's mostly taken care of by the fact that they are in HCAs. Most of that existing habitat is. Most of the known species locations for those species are in there. And we're going to be trying to do operations that foster the development of habitat, both in terms of individual forest stand qualities, but then also the connectivity among stands for those purposes. There are big trees outside of the HCAs that we're going to cut. I want to, be very upfront about that. Just because a stand was older and more mature didn't mean that it made it into a habitat conservation area. For instance, a very isolated stand that wasn't really going to be able to contribute much to a network for the species that is out there. And that will be part of the take that's calculated for the permit. Most of the older stands are in there, not all of them. And that's some of the trade-offs that we're dealing with here.
Well, when the harvest volume is decreased, that directly affects the Oregon Department of Forestry, doesn't it? Isn't that your source of income as well?
It is for state forest management. And so I'll talk a little bit about that. Just at a really high level, the formula break, the way it ends up breaking down is that any of the revenue that is received from these timber harvests, 63.75% of that revenue goes to counties and local taxing districts in which that harvest takes place. Whereas, well, it goes to the 63.75 goes to the counties, and then there's a whole nother distribution formula for how it flows out to the local taxing districts. And I'm probably not worth going into that here. But 36.25% of that is retained by ODF for the management of these lands. And that covers everything from all of our survey and managed costs to all of our planning costs. Everything that we do is we absorb in that budget, reforestation, all of that. There is a shared cost with the counties in terms of the roads that are built in getting into the timber sales. And that's what we call the project work associated with the timber sale, because the purchaser of the timber is credited with that work. And so just because it is in that credited in there, built into the appraisal, and that lessens the revenue that comes in, it has the effect of sharing the cost of that with the counties. So there is a cost share in that respect, with that distribution. And while we're on the subject, you know, I mean, there will be a reduction in revenue. There's been a lot of question about how much. And we need to realize we're dealing with both sides, trying to deal with both sides of the equation here. We control the amount of harvest. We don't control the market price, the value of that timber at any given time. And it's varied quite a lot. So, for instance, right now, log prices are very high. The finished product, the lumber product, the building materials, right, that people use, those prices are fairly flat. They spiked pretty at one point during the pandemic, but they've come back down and they're relatively flat. And so you see that effect on the local mills. You know, we see these closures that are happening across Oregon and quite frankly across the West, and even up into Canada. It's because the commodity, the log that they're buying, is a high price, and they're not getting the price that they need on the finished product. So it's not balancing out very well for them right now. It is, you know, this is one of those awkward relationship things, right? We're all in this together, but right now, for the counties, local taxing districts, and ODF, that high log price is actually a good thing. You know, it means that we are getting significantly more revenue than we thought we would be getting. But at some point, that comes to an end, right? I mean, at some point, all markets fluctuate and we'll see those prices decline.
Well, has it always been that way in terms of how ODF and the counties and so on are funded, or did that change in some way since before the 90s when the taxation system was changed?
So this particular relationship for how state forest revenues are dealt with has been the same since 1967. So it's pretty longstanding. And even prior to that, even though the distribution, the revenue sharing agreement was different, there's always been a form of revenue sharing agreement that was pretty direct between the counties and ODF. And the revenues that ODF has kept from that have always been intended to be used for the management of the lands. So that's important. Other things that are kind of get into the conversation sometimes, like the timber tax or severance taxes and that sort of thing, those have changed over time. Now, those particular items haven't really had an effect on how ODF manages state forest lands. Because, for instance, before the severance tax was ended, well, we didn't get any of that money anyway, so it didn't matter. Now, it affected counties, and I'm not really familiar enough with how that tax was distributed to be able to tell you the exact effects. You know, that'd be best talked about by the counties. But you know, there was an effect there, but it wasn't an effect on ODF, and it wasn't an effect on this particular revenue stream.
So the HCP is going to affect only our state forests. The state forest, will it have any effect outside the state forest? Because the state forests, while large, are small compared to the total amount of forest land in Oregon.
That's correct. So this HCP will not have an effect outside of state forests. 640,000 acres of forests on the west side of Oregon, west of the crest of the Cascades, right? So yeah, it does affect a fairly small amount of the overall forest land base and timber harvest and all the things and species conservation as well. What we see though is really a localized effect that is significant. For instance, there in Clatsop County and in Tillamook County, Washington County as well, and Columbia, there's not a lot of federal land. There's private land and there's state land. So we don't really have, you know, when it comes to public timber that's available on public lands, we are the primary supplier of that. But also in terms of publicly available lands that may have a conservation mandate as part of their mission, we're also the only thing going, right? So it's a, you know, it's a difficult spot to be in that situation. You know, and our lands are managed under a greatest permanent value rule that seeks to find a balance of those social, economic, and environmental values for Oregonians. And so part of that is habitat for native fish and wildlife as well. And then these species that we're talking about, you know, they're threatened and endangered. They're also native fish and wildlife to Oregon. So, yeah. I think when we think about the overall timber harvest in Oregon, at a larger scale, we're not that much of a player. I mean, we are somewhat significant. We manage about, we're talking about 3% of the land base, forest land base in Oregon. And I would say our harvest, it varies depending on the total statewide harvest, but we're probably in the neighborhood of between 6 and 7% of that harvest in any given year. And this is going to take about 1.5% maybe off of that. So, you know, it's an important thing, even though it sounds small at that scale. I don't want to try and minimize the effect that it has where it has it. But what I would really like to see, and I think we have, this is a larger thing than state forests, but we are seeing movement on federal lands through various mechanisms. I think their base harvest has, you know, they are trying to do what they can, but also the Good Neighbor Authority timber sales as part of the Federal Forest Restoration Initiative. They're not necessarily the most valuable timber sales out there either, but they are a way in which the state is engaging to try and move things along on federal land as well. And then, of course, you've got private ownership in there as well with their own objectives and their own harvest objectives. And, you know, that's it's all part of that big equation. And I think what there really needs to be across Oregon as a whole is just a better balance of harvesting on all ownerships, harvesting and conservation.
I'm remembering correctly that harvesting from state forests is lumber that can't be sent, are logs that can't be sent overseas.
That is correct. Our logs, our raw logs, cannot be exported. Of course, the finished lumber can. Be, but yeah, that and the entire reason behind that is to preserve milling infrastructure here, jobs here, and I think that's an important component. And the same is true of federal lands as well, and I think that's a really important thing because you know it's difficult to manage your forests if you lose your infrastructure, if you lose your forest operators, and you lose your own milling capacity. Well, then you lose the ability to do a lot of management in your forests. So it is critical that we keep that export ban on public timber.
Well, it does seem like the state forests have are important to foresters, I think, beyond this the amount of land in them. And is what are the reasons for that?
Ooh, one of my favorite subjects. We if you look at the history of state forests, and whether you're talking about the Tillamook burn or lands that were railroad logged and left in tax default in Clatsop County, that was a major reason, or whether you're talking about east side lands that were high graded, we have the Sun Pass State Forest and the Gilchrist State Forest now over there. We rehabilitate lands. We rehabilitate forests, and that is our legacy. And we're very proud of that, taking something that maybe other people think is a lost cause and making a forest there again. Now, I'm not saying we're perfect. There were a lot of issues with how the Tillamook State Forest, what is now the Tillamook State Forest, was reseeded, but it was necessary. There was no other way to accomplish it. And we have off-site seed there, and we have not the greatest species diversity and all of that kind of stuff. But it's really important to also realize it's still a work in progress. I think people drive through the Tillamook, for instance, and they think, oh, mission accomplished. There's trees here now. No, there's a lot to do. There's a lot of work to do still because, forests take a long time. Right. So I do think it is something that because there's a lot of work to do and there's good constructive work to do, it is of special interest to foresters. It's also special interest to biologists, of all and ologists of all sorts. It's kind of like, what are we doing here? What will be the outcomes? It's really exciting work, actually.
Is species diversity part of the plan in the conservation areas? Is that an important thing in those areas? Because I know in terms of harvesting logs, single species was sort of the thing to do because it was easier and faster and more economically beneficial. But how does that balance change when you're working for a different purpose for conservation?
Absolutely. Species diversity is very important, both tree species diversity and other forest plant species diversity, which are the foundation for, the animal species diversity that you're going to eventually have there. So, and you're right, I mean, when you're looking at a commercial operation, Douglas fir is king, both in terms of price and quality and all that good stuff. But everybody also recognizes the need for other species, your Western hemlock, your Western red cedar, your alder, your big leaf maple, and a whole host of other species as well. So within habitat conservation areas, and especially to develop those complex canopies that these species like, we will definitely be increasing the species diversity of what we do there. And in some cases, there's already some species diversity there, and we go in, do a partial cutting, removing some of the Douglas fir overstory, and we get that. In some cases, it'll be a little bit hard to see the value for some folks. It'll be hard to see the value up front, and especially with Swiss needlecast stands. Because we're going to go, and when you treat a Swiss needlecast stand that's severely infected or even moderately infected, you're clear cutting it. That's what you're doing. And you're going to go in there, you're going to cut it, and you're going to replant it, and you're going to have some Douglas fir in there as well, but you're going to go heavy to your other species as well. Part of the reason that Swiss needlecast is such a problem is because of low species diversity. It's a endemic fungus that causes the disease, right? So or causes the effect. So the thing is, it's got almost 100% Douglas fir out there in a lot of areas right now. So there's nothing to check it. So breaking that up with additional species diversity will help. And also, just the fact that those Douglas fir that are sitting there right now aren't growing means they will start to fall apart. And here's something that the folks that track it may not know, but used to it was just that they had slowed growing, and then they stopped growing. And now with the increase in temperature, heat domes and things like this, and also the increased drought, which isn't severe in the Coast Range, but it is, drier than it used to be. Those trees are dying now. So we are actually seeing the mortality. So we do need to really address that problem.
Well, I just have about one and a half more questions, and I guess one of them is the reduction in harvest volume that we're talking about. Does that seem like something that will be constant? Is it likely to be accelerating, or is it likely as time goes by, that there will be more available for harvest? How does that look going forward?
Yeah, there's a lot to that. So I think initially what I'd like to talk about is we will be going through a process that will be inclusive of the Board of Forestry and the counties as well. The Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee is a statutorily appointed, not appointed, statutorily identified. It's the Board of Commissioners, or I'm sorry, it's the board for the all the counties representation that have Board of Forestry lands there. And we will be going through a process with the Board of Forestry and the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee to establish performance measures for timber harvest, for carbon storage, for various habitat outcomes, you name it. There's going to be a number of things. Those performance measures, the draft performance measures, were presented to the board last September. And this June, we plan to bring it back up again for a joint discussion between the board and FTLAC. Okay. So what we'll be able to do is we're going to go through a very deliberate process to arrive at those performance measures. And so and that will give us our guidance as an agency on how to initially implement our forest management plan that we're currently developing that goes along with the HCP. So the HCP is like this regulatory piece, right, that deals with endangered species compliance, but our forest management plan is the overarching broad document that deals with everything else. So the HCP has certain sideboards it puts in there, but within that, there's a whole host of things that could be done, one of which is harvesting more now and maybe less later, or harvesting a very even amount. And there's been some discussion about that. Do we go ahead and harvest more now, realizing there's less later, but also providing some time, sort of a glide down, if you wish, if you will, for industry to adjust, for the forest sector to adjust, for the counties to adjust, and all of that kind of thing. Or do you take the hit immediately and just get used to that lower harvest level? Because the problem is, you harvest more now, you will harvest even less later. I mean, these trees take a while to grow, so it's going to be beyond any of our lifetimes, the ramifications of some of these decisions, right? But that'll be part of where it's figured out. The other part is, as the HCP moves along and the forest management plan moves along, we're going to find out more about the efficacy of what we're doing, especially in habitat conservation areas. Do we want to do more of that, perhaps? I think some people think of adaptive management as always being a negative thing, like, oh, you're going to have to reduce even further. And no, we're not going to have to reduce further because, again, with the HCP, a deal is a deal. Right. So those are in place. But there is the potential, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Some of these things are working out just like we planned. We're enhancing habitat through these activities all over the place. And so we'll end up doing more of it. That's a real unknown at this point, but that is part of the equation.
And that's part of what's going to be discussed and decided going forward, I guess.
Yeah, so I hope to bring the board and FTLAC together to have the discussion about what the performance measures should be, get some finalization on that, discuss some various scenarios that they would like to see modeled so they can see kind of some draft outcomes for those performance measures. And then they can have a trade-offs discussion about, okay, well, here are the things. And then we eventually get to the point where the Board of Forestry adopts those performance measures, and we have our direction. And there's going to be multiple times in there for the public to be able to provide input, both not just at board meetings, but also through deliberate outreach that we'll be doing, especially during the development of different scenarios to model.
Well, lastly, I just wanted to ask you, will the public have access to some of the conservation areas, and will they likely notice a difference?
So yes, absolutely, they will have access to conservation areas. When we think about recreation and public access and so forth, it applies to everything, right, that we do. And we're not looking to restrict access in there. The main differences that you will see are really inside of conservation areas. What it really does is steer our infrastructure development a little bit. So we will put trails, for instance, through habitat conservation areas. Absolutely. We're going to put roads through there for various reasons as well. But exactly where they are may be a little bit, we've got some other things to be sensitive to in those areas. But nobody's going to be excluded from those areas. Now, whether people will see a difference in those forests, well, in the short term, not really, because it takes them a while to grow. But over time, yeah, I think they will, for sure. I think they're, especially within the habitat conservation areas. Outside the conservation areas, they're still going to see forest management going on as well. And I think that's a good thing. I think when people come out onto our landscape and they see forest management, I hope they take a moment to think about the fact that that forest management pays for that access, really. It pays for our recreation infrastructure. And it really is good for people to understand all the benefits that come out of state forests.
Well, Michael Wilson, thank you very much for your patience with all of our questions and for really helping us to better understand the Habitat Conservation Plan and how it will work. So thanks very much.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure to be here.
We've been talking about the Habitat Conservation Plan with Mike Wilson, the division chief in charge of the state forests for the Oregon Department of Forestry. This was part two of a two-part program about the HCP. If you missed either part, you can always listen to the podcast of the program at kmun.org. This is The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca.
One of the nice things with the HCP is not only the increased riparian protections themselves, but with the HCAs, there's going to be watersheds that have a significant area that is going to be not going to be intensely harvested, right? So hopefully there's good outcomes for everybody.